People who study ancient religions do not often get death threats, unless they're Wendy Doniger. She's one of the most important scholars of Hindu religion in the world. She's got PhDs in Sanskrit and Indian studies from both Harvard and Oxford. But the one country in the world she can't visit is India. Doniger's work has come under attack from Hindu nationalists and from India's ruling right-wing party, the BJP. Her most recent book, called The Hindus, An Alternative History, is so controversial in India that her publisher there has pulled it out of circulation and then destroyed all the remaining copies. Doniger gets death threats from India, and she no longer feels safe visiting there. But as she told Steve Paulson, her writing about Hinduism hasn't changed in over 40 years. What has changed is India itself.
I got away with it for about 40 years. When I think back of the first book I wrote 40 years ago, 71, Shiva, the Erotic Ascetic. Obviously, no one in the government of India has read this book because this stuff about the sexuality of the gods and that, mocking the gods and so forth. So I've been writing about this sort of material now for a long time, and no one minded until the last 10 years or so.
So what happened 10 years ago?
India changed. Well, the world changed. I think that what's happening in India is part of a wave of religious fundamentalism that we know about here in America with the Christians, that we're seeing in Israel, that we know, of course, notoriously in Islam. Even the Buddhists are misbehaving. Everyone thinks that the Buddhists never do anything. And it's happening to Hinduism, too. So I think they've caught it from an international, global movement, which is not simply religion against religion, the old Hindu-Muslim thing. That's an old problem. But Hindu against Hindu, that's fundamentalism. That's where certain Hindus have started to vigorously disapprove of other aspects of their own religion. And that's where I come in for trouble, because I'm writing about aspects of Hinduism that Hindu nationalists, the BJP party, fundamentalists, fundus is what my Indian publisher calls them, the fundus, they don't like that aspect of their own religion.
Now, we should say that you are not being attacked because of what you're saying about current politics, at least not directly.
No.
I mean, you're a historian of religion.
That's
right. Historian of Hinduism. I mean, you're talking about
sacred texts
that were written centuries ago.
I'm talking about the Ramayana, which was composed 200 BC, 200 CE, and saying that there's a passage in the Ramayana in which Sita accuses her brother-in-law Lakshman of desiring her. That's there in the Sanskrit text. This is not acceptable. You're not allowed to say that. It implies that Sita and Rama and Lakshman, who are simply epic characters in the ancient period, who have now become deified. Rama is a god and his wife is a goddess. And the version of that story of how Rama and Sita went into the forest with Rama's brother Lakshman is told in only one way by the Hindu nationalists. And it leaves out a great deal of detail that's in the ancient Sanskrit epic, which makes them more complicated human beings with frailties and flaws. And that's the wrong way to tell that story. There was an essay by the great A.K. Ramanujan, a much greater scholar than I am, who had written a famous essay called Many Ramayanas, about all the different ways there are to tell the story of Rama and Sita and Lakshman. And it was on the history syllabus in Delhi. And this crowd, about 5 years ago, got it off the history syllabus.
But why? I mean, why is there such concern about these texts that were written centuries ago, millennia ago?
History matters. History really matters. If you read history in certain ways in India today, it means that the Muslims should leave. I mean, they're reading the Muslims out of Indian history. They're reading the Muslims out of India. They're trying to make India a Hindu nation. And that takes some tricks with history.
I mean, there are a lot of Muslims, obviously, who live in India.
There are a lot of Muslims, a lot of people doing it. Thousands of people were killed when they tore down a mosque, a great mosque, the Babri Mosque, the mosque of the Emperor Babur near Delhi in Ayodhya, because the textbooks, the Sanskrit texts say that that's where Rama was born. Well, Rama is not like Jesus. Rama is like Adam. Rama is really an ancient mythological figure. To say that he was born there is a non-historical statement. But the statement that he was born there meant that they tore down the mosque and the Hindu police simply stood by and watched while mobs tore down one of the great ancient mosques of India, and people were killed on both sides and there were reactions. It set off riots. And that was about history. That was about what happened in a mythological place. Another example of history, the story is that Rama built a bridge to a mythical island called Lanka, which is now identified with Sri Lanka. And they wanted, the Indian government wanted to cut away some coral formations that make a kind of a barrier between the island of Sri Lanka and India, and ships have to go all around it. A lot of money, a lot of gasoline is wasted and so forth, a lot of oil. So they wanted to cut through there. But the Hindu nationalists said, no, 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 that's where Rama built the bridge. And they succeeded in stopping that project. There is no canal through that area. Ships still have to go all the way around Sri Lanka to get to the other side of India. So history is being used to change the present in all sorts of ways.
So this is obviously serious business politically, and it's also serious for scholars like yourself. I mean, to the point where you have to be careful because scholars have been threatened and have they been killed as well?
One man was killed. There was a big article about it, a man who's been a Hindu man. This is about I'm a woman and I'm an American. There are problems I have to deal with specifically, but a Hindu man was killed.
For
writing against what he calls the idolatrous aspects of Hinduism. He disapproved of the superstitions and doing worship of idols and so forth and so. So he criticized a lot of contemporary Hinduism. And he was murdered. And other writers have been hurt. And publishers' offices have been ransacked. And computers smashed. So in India, people are getting really badly hurt physically. In America, I worry that my students and younger scholars who don't have tenure are simply changing what they are writing about. They're not going to get visas. They're not going to get tenure. They're not going to get their books published in India. That there's a kind of self-censorship going on because people are so scared, not that they'll be killed or maimed, but that simply they will not succeed in their academic work. So there's a whole gamut, a whole range of problems from physical violence to just people dropping the study of India and taking up the study of ancient Greece instead.
Now, this is a complicated story. I mean, there are obviously different, sometimes competing interpretations of Hinduism, as there are in every major religion. And there's also the history of how particular Hindu sacred texts have become canonized and others rejected. And you've traced this back to the British colonial rule in India. What happened?
Well, Indian history begins long before the British. Many things happened before the British ever got to India. By the time the British came, there were many different sorts of sacred texts in India and many different sorts of Hindus that use one text or another. When the British came to India, they wanted to find a Hindu Bible and they wanted to have a unified Hinduism that they could deal with as a whole, in contrast with the way they would deal with Islam as a whole, and Islam had the Quran. These were also the British Protestants, so they were a bit anti-Catholic. So they were book people rather than ritual people, and they wanted to know what is your book. And they got some Brahmins in Bengal, which was where the British really began, to say that their book was the Bhagavad Gita. So the British said, great, that's the Hindu Bible. And so that statement by the British was picked up by a certain kind of Hindu, a certain branch of Hindus beginning in Bengal in Calcutta, and formed a new kind of so-called reformed Hinduism, or Sanatana Dharma, as it's sometimes called, which is just a particular branch of Hinduism, which was the Hinduism of people who spoke English and people who had positions of power under the Raj and so forth. And that one branch of Hinduism now is part of the BJP program, and everything is the Bhagavad Gita, whereas the Bhagavad Gita is one of just a number of texts.
Are there certain strains of Hinduism that were kind of shut out, or is there a kind of a particular interpretation of Hinduism that has become then dominant?
There is the Hinduism of the ascetic tradition, the meditation tradition, the yoga tradition, which is misogynist, which is largely Brahmin. It's anti the lower castes. It's anti-ritual. It's anti-sexual. It's very sanitized. It's a particular kind of Hinduism which is being lifted up as the right kind of Hinduism. And the other Hinduisms, the Hinduism of goat sacrifices, which still go on all the time in India, the Hinduism of people who eat meat, and most Hindus actually are not vegetarians, and many of them eat beef. The idea that no Hindus eat beef is a political statement. It's not a historical statement. The sexual carvings on the temples, the great temples of Khajuraho and Konark, the Kama Sutra, the temple dancers, the dancing girls. The British got the dancing girls out of the temples, and now that's part of the sanitized version of Hinduism. So there's a whole lot of Hinduism that I like best, the Hinduism of satire, the Hinduism of violence, sometimes religious violence, the Hinduism of imagination, of sexuality, mocking the gods. All of that is simply written off as not the real Hinduism. And anyone who produces examples of it, writes about it, exalts it, is doing a bad thing.
So what has all of this meant for you? I assume you are at some risk if you go out in public. I mean, do you even go to India?
I can't go to India right now because I am technically in contempt of court. I was served with a summons when this became a criminal case, and the Indian lawyer said, don't answer the summons. It was sent to the provost office at the University of Chicago because there's no extradition. And so I did not testify at any point because I can't go to India. So at the moment, I'm legally unable to go to India. I also would be stupid to go to India because it would be, I think, dangerous for me. Outside of India, I don't feel that I'm in danger. I have security when I speak in public, but that's...
I mean, you are often heckled when you're...
That's it. I have security because the people who come, they ruin the question and answer period, and they have to be escorted out so that we can have a serious discussion. But I get heckled, and so there's security to prevent that happening.
Given the sensitivity of some of these people who have objected against your book, who say that, you know, this is salacious, this history, I mean, it's like overly sexualized, why push it? Why not just step back and say, okay, this is offensive to some people. It's not worth going there. I'll just let it go.
Oh, but it is worth it. It is worth it. If you're a historian, you're a historian, you want to show people what really is there. Secondly, it's wonderful. I mean, the Hindu attitude to sexuality is so brilliant and so much better than the history of sexuality in Judaism or Islam or Christianity. I mean, the Abrahamic religions have not done nearly so well with sexuality as Hinduism has. The Kama Sutra is a fabulous book. It's a book of deep understanding of the importance of sexuality in human life. There's just a great deal to be learned from it.
And the Kama Sutra is a sacred text?
The Kama Sutra is not a sacred text,
okay.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I quoted it to show that in ancient India there was an openness and a celebration of sexuality unlike anything that there was in Europe until the 19th century practically. No, that's not a sacred text. But in the sacred text, the Veda, this most ancient text, there are wonderful passages about sexuality. So first of all, I want the world to know how good Hinduism is. How much better Hinduism is than any of the Abrahamic religions. How much more profound it is about human psychology. How much more interesting it is. So I think it's a good thing, and I think it's to the credit of the Hindus that they have this. Secondly, if you're writing a book about something, you have to tell what it's like. What's the point of writing a book if you're going to say, I'm only going to tell you a little piece because the rest of it is going to make some people mad?
It's a remarkable story. Thank you for coming in, for talking about all of this.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on the program.
That's Wendy Doniger with Steve Paulson. Wendy's a professor of history of religion at the University of Chicago. Her most recent book is Hindus, An Alternative History.